Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. On this podcast, we're going to discuss some examples where DNA data is not painting a consistent picture of common ancestry. A recent article on Science Daily titled "A New Evolutionary History of Primates" claims that by combining genetic data from 54 genes, totaling 34,927 base pairs, from a variety of primates, that researchers have created a robust new phylogenetic tree, which resolves many long-standing issues in primate taxonomy. That sounds great until you read the fine print. The paper used dozens of genes, or what they call large-scale sequencing, to create the phylogeny, a method which is designed to smooth over conflicts between trees based upon individual genes. This method fails to test whether individual genes paint a consistent picture of common descent. Moreover, even after using this method, not everything about the tree is neat and tidy. Even when using many genes to construct the tree, the paper reports that there were a variety of potential subtrees which conflicted with one another. As it stated, quote, "However, greater frequency of phylogenetic inconsistencies or unresolved nodes occur in these subset trees compared to the entire concatenated dataset," unquote. Indeed, such phylogenetic inconsistencies between different phylogenetic trees are not uncommon at all, particularly in important parts of the purported primate tree. While this paper used methods that smoothed over conflicts between trees, another recent paper found primate phylogenetic data that pointed in opposite directions. A recent article on Science Daily titled "Genetic Archaeology Finds Parts of the Human Genome More Closely Related to Orangutans Than Chimps" stated, quote, "In a study published online in Genome Research, in coordination with the publication of the orangutan genome sequence, scientists have presented the surprising finding that although orangutans and humans are more distantly related, some regions of our genomes are more alike than those of our closest living relative, the chimpanzee," unquote. Of course, they call this finding surprising because it contradicts the phylogeny preferred by most evolutionists. The Science Daily article noted that in about 0.5% of our genome, we are closer related to orangutans than we are to chimpanzees, and in about 0.5%, chimpanzees are closer related to orangutans than us. The technical paper concluded, quote, "Our analyses find that for 0.8% of our genome, humans are more closely related to orangutans than to chimpanzees," unquote. Since humans are typically said to be more closely related to chimps, this data conflicts with the standard supposed tree. The basic problem is that one gene, or portion of the genome, gives you one version of the tree, while another gene, or portion of the genome, gives you a very different version of the tree. This leads to discrepancies between molecule-based trees, wherein DNA data fails to provide a consistent picture of common ancestry. And of course, this problem is very common outside of primate phylogenetics as well. Another striking example of this common phenomenon was discussed in February 2011 at geneticarchaeology.com in an article titled "Discovery of Jumping Gene Cluster Tangles Tree of Life." According to the article, quote, "Since the days of Darwin, the tree of life has been the preeminent metaphor for the process of evolution, reflecting the gradual branching and changing of individual species. The discovery that a large cluster of genes appears to have jumped directly from one species of fungus to another, however, significantly strengthens the argument that a different metaphor, such as a mosaic, may be more appropriate," unquote. Well, that's one way to look at it. But hundreds of years ago, when astronomers still held to the inaccurate geocentric model of the solar system, they would often encounter data that ran directly counter to that model. Sometimes planets would appear to temporarily move backwards in what they called retrograde motion. These early scientists explained away the bad data by inventing the epicycle. Epicycles didn't actually explain anything. They were adopted solely for the purpose of saving the bad geocentric model of the solar system from being falsified. Eventually, scientists accepted that planets were not moving backwards and realized that the geocentric model of the solar system was simply wrong. Planets orbited the sun, not the Earth. Proponents of neo-Darwinian evolution have their modern-day epicycles to attempt to explain why the data often runs counter to the tree of life hypothesis. They have a mechanism to explain away the fact that a large cluster of similar genes appears in two groups where the common ancestor is not thought to have had those genes. Their epicycle is called horizontal gene transfer, also known as lateral gene transfer. This article explains how the investigators invoke this common epicycle, stating, quote, Rokas and Slot discovered that millions of years ago, a cluster of 23 genes jumped from one strain of mold commonly found on starchy foods like bread and potatoes to another strain of mold that lives in herbivore dung and specializes in breaking down plant fibers. The findings came as a major surprise, as there are only a handful of cases in recent evolutionary history where this type of gene transfer between organisms, known as horizontal gene transfer, has been reported in complex cells like those found in plants, animals, and fungi, unquote. Of course, the problem is that in evolutionary biology, genomic data that doesn't fit with a standard tree is taken as evidence for horizontal gene transfer. As one article in Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society B stated, quote, topological discordance between a gene tree and a trusted reference tree is taken as prima facie instance of lateral gene transfer, unquote. In other words, there appears to be no data that can falsify the tree of life. If the data doesn't fit with the tree, they just chalk it up to the epicycle of horizontal or lateral gene transfer. Thus, when you hold the tree of life with an unscientific and unfalsifiable mindset, breakdowns in the tree of life become evidence for horizontal gene transfer. In fact, the article on geneticarchaeology.com uses this very logic to infer horizontal gene transfer, stating, quote, Since the 1980s, however, evolutionary scientists have become increasingly aware that horizontal or lateral gene transfer also plays a major role in evolution. In vertical gene transfer, all the genetic material in each new species comes from a single ancestral species. In horizontal gene transfer, by contrast, species that receive bits of genetic material from its neighbors are directly related to a number of often unrelated species. Horizontal gene transfer was first discovered in bacteria and has been recognized as largely responsible for the problem of drug resistance. If one bacterium evolves a method for surviving a drug, this ability can spread rapidly to other unrelated microorganisms via horizontal gene transfer, substantially reducing the drug's effectiveness. Their researchers now generally agree that horizontal gene transfer is relatively common among simple organisms like bacteria. They have continued to assume that it remained relatively rare among complex organisms like plants and animals. The thinking has been that there is very little horizontal gene transfer among plants and animals, except for a few big ancient events and maybe the occasional transfer of a single gene here or there, Slot said. Our discovery suggests that horizontal transfer of gene clusters may have been a big player, not only in the evolution of bacteria, but also in more complex organisms, unquote. Is there any way to test universal common ancestry or the tree of life? There should be, and it seems like the tree of life is not passing those tests. But if you simply invoke epicycles like horizontal gene transfer every time you get bad data that conflicts with the standard tree, then you're not treating universal common ancestry like a falsifiable scientific hypothesis. In fact, there are many other studies where DNA data has failed to paint a consistent picture of common ancestry. I'll give just a few examples right now, but these represent just a fraction of papers that have found the same problem. A 2009 paper in Trends in Ecology and Evolution titled Gene Tree Discordance, Phylogenetic Inference and the Multi-Species Coalescent notes that, quote, a major challenge for incorporating such large amounts of data into inference of species trees is that conflicting genealogical histories often exist in different genes throughout the genome, unquote. A 1999 paper titled Molecular Phylogenies Become Functional in Trends in Ecology and Evolution observes that, quote, the mitochondrial cytochrome B tree implied an absurd phylogeny of mammals, regardless of the method of tree construction. Cats and whales fell within primates, grouping with simians, monkeys and apes, and strepsirrhines, lemurs, bush babies, and lorises, to the exclusion of tarsiers. Cytochrome B is probably the most commonly sequenced gene in vertebrates, making this surprising result even more disconcerting, unquote. Mashagian et al.'s paper, Large-Scale Taxonomic Profiling of Eukaryotic Model Organisms, a comparison of orthologous proteins encoded by the human, fly, nematode, and yeast genomes in genome research, explains that when one tries to create phylogenetic trees of life's major animal groups, that, quote, different proteins generate different phylogenetic trees, unquote. A paper by Rokas et al. In Evolution and Development titled Conflicting Phylogenetic Signals at the Base of the Metazoan Tree recounts conflicts in the metazoan tree, stating, quote, the robust reconstruction of metazoan history has proven to be a difficult task, unquote. A 2005 paper by Rokas and Science titled Animal Evolution and the Molecular Signature of Radiations Compressed in Time acknowledges that, quote, the phylogenetic relationships among most metazoan phyla remain uncertain, unquote. Again, the problem lies in the fact that trees based on one gene or protein often conflict with trees based upon other genes. Their study employed the many-gene technique and yet still found that, quote, a 50-gene data matrix does not resolve relationships among most metazoan phyla, unquote. Antonis Rokas and Sean B. Carroll published a paper in 2006 titled Bushes in the Tree of Life in PLOS Biology, which offers a striking admission of deficiencies in the tree of life, acknowledging that, quote, a large fraction of single genes produce phylogenies of poor quality, unquote. The paper observed that one study, quote, omitted 35% of single genes from their data matrix because those genes produced phylogenies at odds with conventional wisdom, unquote. What about the technique of simply adding more data? Well, they suggest that, quote, certain critical parts of the tree of life may be difficult to resolve regardless of the quantity of conventional data available, unquote. They might attribute this problem to rapid diversification of various clades, but are we looking at a legitimate explanation or another example of an epicycle where evolutionists are trying to prevent the tree of life hypothesis from being falsified? The paper suggests that, quote, the recurring discovery of persistently unresolved clades, bushes, should force a reevaluation of several widely held assumptions in molecular systematics, unquote. Unfortunately, one assumption that they seem unwilling to reevaluate is the assumption that the tree of life hypothesis is ultimately correct. Nardi et al.'s 2003 paper in Science titled Hexapod Origins, Monophyletic or Paraphyletic, finds that the molecular data indicated that six-leg arthropods, or hexapods, i.e. insects, are not monophyletic, a striking conclusion that differed with virtually all previous thinking in evolutionary biology. As the article stated, quote, although this tree shows many interesting outcomes, it also contains some evidently untenable relationships, which nevertheless have strong statistical support, unquote. Cao et al.'s paper in Journal of Molecular Evolution titled Conflict Among Individual Mitochondrial Proteins and Resolving the Phylogeny of Eutherian Orders finds that molecular-based phylogenies conflicted sharply with previously established phylogenies of major animal groups, such as ferungulates, rodents, and primates. The article concludes that this tree is, quote, not due to a stochastic error, but is due to convergent or parallel evolution, unquote. Mendel et al. Wrote a paper with similar findings in Proceeding of the National Academy of Sciences USA titled Multiple Independent Origins of Mitochondrial Gene Order in Birds, which describes the difficulties encountered when evolutionary biologists have tried to reconstruct a phylogenetic tree for the major groups of birds using mitochondrial DNA. Trees based upon such mitochondrial DNA molecules have conflicted with traditional notions of bird relationships. Strikingly, they even find convergent similarity between some bird mitochondrial DNA and the mitochondrial DNA of distant species of snakes and lizards. The article suggests that bird mitochondrial DNA underwent, quote, multiple independent origins, unquote, with their study making a, quote, finding of multiple independent origins for a particular mitochondrial DNA gene order among diverse birds. Those are just a few examples, but let's return back to the studies of human phylogenetic relationships discussed earlier in this podcast. According to one study we discussed, 0.8% of our genome is more similar to orangutans than it is to chimpanzees. 0.8% of our genome might not sound like a lot, but that equates to over 20 million base pairs. That means that over 500 times more raw genetic information than was used in the PLOS genetics paper that purportedly created a, quote, robust new phylogenetic tree, is supposedly pointing in the wrong phylogenetic direction. The paper in PLOS genetics could only find a robust new phylogenetic tree after using methods that are designed to avoid this problem and ignore conflicts between trees. That might sound good, but these methods are wholly assuming rather than testing common descent. But isn't that the theme that we've seen throughout this podcast? This brings us to the final point of this discussion. In the end, molecular trees are based upon the sheer assumption that the degree of genetic similarity reflects degree of evolutionary relatedness. One paper in the journal Biological Theory makes this assumption explicit, stating, quote, molecular systematics is largely based on the assumption, first clearly articulated by Zucker, Candel, and Pauling, that the degree of overall similarity reflects degree of relatedness. This assumption derives from interpreting molecular similarity or dissimilarity between taxa in the context of a Darwinian model of continual and gradual change. Review of the history of molecular systematics and its claims in the context of molecular biology reveals that there is no basis for the molecular assumption, unquote. The article goes on to say that, quote, for historians and philosophers of science, the questions that arise are how belief in the infallibility of molecular data for reconstructing evolutionary relationships emerged and how this belief became so central, unquote. Clearly, this assumption fails when different genes paint contradictory pictures of evolutionary relationships. But are there other mechanisms that can explain DNA similarities besides inheritance from a common ancestor, especially when such similarities are appearing in places unpredicted by common descent? As we discussed before, designers commonly reuse parts that work in different designs. One equally good explanation for the reason that genetic similarity is continuously being discovered in places both predicted and unpredicted by common descent could be common design. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future, encouraging you to keep an open mind when it comes to universal common ancestry. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com. Want to spend your summer studying intelligent design in Seattle for free? Discovery Institute is raising up the next generation of scientists and scholars with the 2011 Summer Seminars for college juniors, seniors, and graduate students. The two intensive 9-day learning opportunities run from July 8th through 16th. This year, in addition to the seminar focusing on ID and the natural sciences, the Center for Science and Culture announces the new C.S. Lewis Fellows Program on Science and Society, which will explore the growing impact of science on politics, economics, social policy, bioethics, theology, and the arts. Discovery Institute will pay expenses for students who are accepted into the programs, and applications are open now through April 22, 2011. For more information, visit www.discovery.org/STEM. That's www.discovery.org/SEM.